Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I think Pretty Bird's out.
studio.
Oh, no.
Would like to say welcome, or you can, Rex, would you do the intro?
Yeah, this is a team of voices, What the Flock, starring the Flown the Coop Pretty Bird, brought to you by the A.P. Taylor Foundation. You could find us on the oldpoetry.com website under Team of Voices. And there's also another little nook and cranny for the A.P. Taylor Foundation, which is sponsoring the show. That was Garbage, Trash, or however you want to put it. No, Garbage is the band, I believe. But Pretty Bird's got all the details on that. Unfortunately, she's got technical difficulties, it would appear. So just to add to the stress of the evening, I think she was obsessing over it, but that's another story. So here we are tonight. We're going to be talking about obsession. At what point, you know, is it unhealthy? I think was the point that we were going to be hammering. It's just one of those things that I guess hits us all in one way or another. The other voice you heard a few minutes ago, that was our buddy Sky. How you doing tonight, Sky?
Good. How you doing, Rod?
Flying by the seat of my pants, since I have no idea what's going on in the studio, and this was not my gig. So, you know, I was all prepared to ride shotgun, but not take over. You know.
Well, but, she'll be back. She said on the board, yeah. She's coming back, and but I know
you
don't really. So I just wanted to let you know. How has your week been? Have you had any obsessions?
You know, I tend to obsess over the weirdest things. For me, even writing becomes an obsession to a point that I used to run around with like a pen and paper. You know, it could be 2 o'clock in the morning, and if I had a thought, I had to write it down. Otherwise, it would disappear on me. So, I get obsessed on to almost to the point of being rude. You know, people that you're comfortable with, you're friends with, and you could be in the middle of a conversation, or me personally anyway, you know, it's like you're listening to them speak and you want to say something before you forget it. And you know, sometimes you get so excited about saying it, you forget about decorum and you just kind of interrupt and be like, oh, that reminds me, I got to say something or something like that. So it makes it seem a little, I want to say, out of character sometimes. Just to try and get that thought out before you forget it, and then, you know, you end up still in the conversation of being rude, almost as if, you know, what the other person's trying to say doesn't matter because you're obsessed with trying to get your point out and not losing it. I mean, if you look around, there's a lot of things that turn into obsessions, I think, from, you know, food to relationships, and they take over different aspects of our lives. It's very interesting.
Your comment kind of reminded me of this comic that I heard recently. And I forget how she said it, but I'm just going to say shoebox, but it's not the term she used, but I can't remember the term. So I'm just going to say that everybody's just running around with their own shoebox, trying to show each other their own shoeboxes and waiting for a word enterprise to, and on the shelf, take, that's what she said, that we're all like little snowballs and we're all waiting to show each other our own snowballs, even in the middle of conversation. So, I think Pretty Bird is here.
I am. So Blog Talk hates me just a wee little bit. It kicked me off my computer. It would not let me dial in on my tablet, on my phone, on Google Voice. The direct dial button was off. I had to reload everything. I don't know what's going on. It had completely disappeared off the internet for, you know, 5 minutes before the show. So hopefully it'll all work out. So what did I miss?
Nothing really. I mean, I mentioned Garbage, but I didn't give any real details. I mentioned your topic, but, you know, I went into it from somewhat of my perspective and how, you know, the different areas of your life you find different things that we obsess over, from writing to food to relationships.
No, I want full on Fatal Attraction obsession because, yeah, I was feeling a little sinister. But before we get into our show, let me pretend like it didn't start 5 minutes ago in my absence. Welcome to A Team of Voices, and you can find us on allpoetry.com, the world's largest poetry site. It is free to join. Come search for us. And tonight's episode and all our episodes are brought to you by the AP Poetry Foundation. And so, yes, that song is number one, Crush by Garbage, from like 1995. I do so love that song. I haven't heard it in like forever, and it popped up on some show I was watching. I was like, what is that song? I know that song. I couldn't place that song. So I'm like frantically searching the internet, you know, for, you know, a throwback to my youth. And so, yeah, that was a B-side to their debut single, Vow. It was in the film adaptation, the one of Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio. It was in like five or six different soundtracks. It was on the soundtrack to True Blood. Oh, that's where I actually saw it, because I was watching that stupidness. I'm a glutton for bad TV. And so, yeah, it was recorded in between March 94 and May 95. And, you know, they were basically in the basement, one of their basements, just singing songs. And woo, they had an album. How fabulous is that? So, yeah, so I was looking for that. There's lyrics to this song that are, I will burn for you, feel pain for you, I will twist a knife and bleed my aching heart. You know, I will lie for you, I will beg and steal for you, I will crawl on hands and knees until you see you're just like me. And I'm like, now I tend to be more introspective with my obsessions. I tend to be all, you know, 1,001 possibilities and what ifs and yada, 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 blah, 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 all up in my head. I'm not outwardly crazy, but I am a nutball inside. And, but I have had people that I have been stalked in weird ways. Like, don't ask me. I have no clue why these people, but I don't know, but it's a thing. And it's like people think that because I write something that, you know, mimics something in their own life, that we are now kindred and I am their new best friend, or I am the love of their life and we've never had a conversation, never commented on anything. I sure the heck didn't tell them what my real name was. And yet I had, you know, like little cards sent to my house, like in my actual home. And I'm all like, listen, you internet sleuths, this is not okay. Not okay. And so I was very curious what everybody's experience with on either side or the multifaceted topic of obsession. So first of all, hi, Rack. Hi, Sky. Thank you for saving my butt. And have you guys either like obsessed over someone or been obsessed over in an uncomfortable way? Okay, granted, the obsessing isn't uncomfortable for us, but it may make other people uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Or, but I don't know. You know, people make me uncomfortable in general because they just do.
It's funny because, you know, on the one hand, sometimes people think, you know, oh, this is the kind of love that I want. I want someone to idolize me. And then, you know, at some point, the responsibility ekes into it. It's like, you know, do I really want to have that responsibility about, you know, being the center of this person's life? And then the realization comes in after that, and it's like, you know, oh, my God, what have I stepped into? You know, it's almost like a thing that – Yeah, it to me, it feels like you get hit with it almost in stages. It's like it sounds like a good idea on paper, and then when it starts to play out, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Now, you know, if I say the wrong thing, if I do the wrong thing, I'm crushing this person's world, and I don't want to be responsible for their happiness. And then, you know, in the end, it's like, now I can't even go to the bathroom without, you know? It's like, you know, no, what did I do? You know?
That's when it's time to run.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the thing, and I tell my boys, don't set the bar of expectation so high, because everybody wants to be romantic. Everybody wants, you know, you want to get your girl these things for Valentine's Day and their birthday and Easter baskets and Christmas and all these things. You want to be the guy that does all the romantic things. But if you start off being, you know, grandiose romantic, any taper down of that is going to be, don't you love me anymore? And you can't keep that crap up. That's just not reality, you know? And so I try to teach them special occasions are great and do reasonable romance. Little tiny nothing things can be wonderfully romantic that don't go outside of who you are comfortable being to impress anybody with anything, because the right person will be impressed with you as you are. But yeah, I mean, it is, we tend to create our own unfortunate dynamics with the hope of what we want things to be, or, you know, that whole part of romance is when it's new, which is amazing. You know, when the honeymoon is over, this is my, you know, air quotes that nobody can see. And reality sets in. I was like, I understand new, but I that's not the part that I've ever liked. I don't like the new. I like the comfortable. I like knowing how somebody likes their coffee, or that they like to read the paper in silence on Sunday morning. Yeah, I'm not old, it's fine. And things like that. That is where it's real for me, you know? Until it gets to that point, it almost feels like people can walk away at any time once they know all of your ugliness, you know? Like, I've got issues. Like, me and my husband cannot share toothpaste ever, because I will kill him. I mean, it's just one of those things. He is a grab the tube and squeeze, and I am the roll it from the bottom, you know? And it irks me if I have to just sit there and fix it every time I brush my teeth. So we do not share toothpaste. And it's those little things, though, that I absolutely love. Because, you know, it's those things that if the relationship is just getting over that honeymoon phase, that could break somebody up. I've seen people break up for life. I can't with the toothpaste, or he leaves the cap off the toilet seat. These are not reasons to break up with somebody. These are excuses to escape, you know? But yeah, the obsession, I know, I mean, there's a difference to me between obsession and unrequited love, you know? You can have feelings for somebody that they don't return and not be a creep about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when it's just the staring and the glaring and the inappropriate gift-giving and the, you know, let me give you this gold watch on your birthday, and even though you're never going to go out with me, you have a boyfriend and whatever, you know, these are things that happen in real life. And I'm just like,
I'm like falling in love with a lesbian.
Like what?
Like falling in love with a lesbian. I'm sorry.
Oh, poor guy. I bet you get that a lot, though. All the inappropriate. Well, have you ever questions that are nobody's freaking business?
Guilty.
You know?
Have you ever what?
That's just it. Have you ever? Because, you know, like I said, it's nobody's business. And I'm sure that you get all these questions. I mean, I get all these questions. So I'm assuming everybody gets these questions.
So I don't, I mean, I think I've had definitely the unrequited. I definitely have had that. I don't think... I think if they were going on obsession, I went back away because I'm not really into that. But,
I don't even know anybody who is. I'm like, no, if you do not adore me to the point where I'm uncomfortable, then I can't talk to you.
But I feel like I'm pretty straightforward. Everybody, you know, I mean, when it comes to male affections, I think everybody, I'm pretty straightforward about that because I don't like false signals. So I'm like, no, sorry. I am only into women. And I think everybody's always been really respectful to that. Woman, I've never had obsessions. I do have a lot of women that flirt with me that are not really, they don't take it seriously, but I think it's because women find other women really, like, they don't find them as threatening. So I do have a lot of playful flirting with, that comes my way, and I don't mind that either. I mean, even from straight people, like straight women, that's fine. I mean, they're not serious, and I know they're not, but I don't think I've ever been obsessed. I mean, I've definitely been on the receiving end of unrequited, where it comes through in my writing, like, you know, where it keeps coming back and you kind of keep filtering through it. But I don't think that's, you know, I think that's just dealing with stuff. I think my obsession lies, if I had an obsession, which I think I do, I hyper-focus on a select amount of things, and then I tend to let other things kind of tassel that shouldn't be. Like, maybe I'll really focus on my artwork, and then I'll let my poetry slip, or I'll super focus on a project, or I'll super focus. I'm a hyper-focus kind of person, and sometimes in past relationships, and I've learned, I tend to hyper-focus on the person that I'm with, because I'm a giver, and then maybe, like, some of my friends have to say, hey, we're here, remember us? Like, I have a hard time with balance, I don't think it's obsession-based. I think it's, I have a hard time in general with balance, so I don't even think that it would be considered obsession. I think I just have a hard time sometimes balancing things.
Well, it sounds like it's a quick attachment. And not nothing. Emotions are a drug. They are, I don't care if it's a good emotion or a bad emotion, they're all chemical reactions that sometimes are really overwhelming. So I have an interesting question. Well, what I think is an interesting question. It could be completely not, but, you know, whatever. It's my show. I'm going to ask it anyway. And here's the thing. If you believe in fate or soulmates or that kind of deep connection with somebody, you know, what is the difference between that or that animal attraction or any version of that? What's the difference between that and where's the line between that and obsession? Because if you are, if you meet somebody and it is just in the air, sparks are flying, you know, and then you can't get them out of your mind, or you walk three blocks out of your way around lunch to see them and to whatever. Like, where is the line between, oh, but they're my soulmate, and I am so obsessed with you? Because if you can't live without them, or you feel you can't live without them, or, you know, like, what, that all sounds crazy to me. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist and it's not true. I mean, it could be crazy on this side and 100% correct on that side. So, you know, what are your thoughts? Because, you know, I think that fairy tales and love stories and romance novels, you want, you kind of long for somebody to risk their life for you, or somebody you love enough to risk your life for. The truth is, if somebody's going to throw themselves in front of a bus for me, I'm going to be like, you're an idiot, but thanks. You know? I was like, I don't think I find that romantic.
I think when it starts, I don't find that attractive. I find someone who is engaging and honest and, I don't know. Let me think about how I want to say that. I like people that kind of challenge me as a person and make me think out of the box. And a person who has, like, a larger grasp on things. And I don't think that I would necessarily want the weight of someone else's happiness and security and safety put on my shoulders. Like, I don't think I would, I don't know if I, I don't think I like that.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the we're very loose as a society with, you know, but he makes me happy. And I call bullshit on that statement. It's a misnomer. It's misleading.
Yeah.
Because
I like someone just, to be confident in with themselves to say, I love myself enough, where if this becomes toxic or this becomes something that I'm the term, I love myself enough to step away. I think that I would respect that person a lot more than I would be like, I will let you do anything or will do anything. And, you know, I think that I would have a lot more respect for someone to say, I love myself enough to know that this is toxic for me and
if,
you.
Even if it's not toxic for you?
Even if it's not, well, that would be very selfish, wouldn't it? If I knew that I was toxic for them.
Love is a selfish thing. We love very selfishly. It's just the nature of the beast.
I think she's hitting on the line that you're trying to nail down. When you start to lose yourself in that obsession, and it's no more, you know, who you are. It's more, you know, whatever it takes kind of thing. That's when it's just unhealthy, I think. You know, it's one thing to be involved with someone, in love with someone, involved with, you know, who they are, how they are. To allow that to swallow who you are and lose yourself in it, that's when it's obsessive and unhealthy.
Well, there's also a line there, because any long-term relationship, even friendship, you tend to gravitate towards the same things over time and end up being a lot more similar than when you started. It's just we kind of meld into who we surround ourselves with to a certain degree. But if it's a long-term love relationship, well, I guess friendship too, because there's love there, there's a lot of give and take. There has to be. And you know, sometimes one person is needed more than the other, and it ebbs and it flows. But here's the thing. When it comes to romantic love, I am very much... it'll take a lot for me to get divorced, simply because I still believe in forever. And that can be all naive. I give no shits. I vowed to put in the work. So sometimes it sucks, and sometimes it sucks to be me, and sometimes I'm sure it sucks to be him. But overall, it's nice to have somebody who has your back, and, you know, there's a lot of love there. The love doesn't go away because, you know, somebody gets crazy or somebody pisses you off or somebody hurts your feelings. It gets complicated, but it doesn't leave like that. It takes a long time for that to diminish, for things to weigh different. So what part of that, I don't know, 20 or 30 year relationship where you are, you know, you do what you do for the greater good, for your greater good, for their greater good, for the greater good of the both of you. And sometimes it's a long time before you can focus on yourself. So there isn't a lot of difference in my mind between, you know, putting yourself second to make sure somebody else is okay and making them your entire world. Because except for the verbiage, it feels the same. And except for the mental perspective, it acts the same, which I thought was really, really interesting, because so much of life or how we define people or actions isn't how you look at it, you know?
Yes.
You know, I haven't looked at my studio in the longest time, so I don't even know if I have anybody waiting or if people have hung up. I am horrible today. Jeez, geez. Oh, my gosh, I'm horrible. Poor Sweet. Hi, Sweet. I love you very much. How long have you been holding that I've just been jibber-jabbering?
Oh, since the second you said, I'm back, it kicked me off, but let's pretend to start the show again.
Oh, no. Oh, my
my sweet girl. I love you so much. I really, really do. Thank you for hanging in there. I went off on a tangent. I was in my own little thing. I was asking a million and a half questions, loving the conversation. Feel free to join in any part of the conversation that you didn't get to answer because I didn't see you.
That's okay. I'm sorry I obsess about you, Sky, and you know, it's just going to happen. You just have to deal with me.
Hey, I'm not saying I've never been in the position where I completely invest myself in someone else and I fall into that. I'm trying to be better about that. That's all I'm saying. Although I've been single for 7 years. So, like, nobody should be taking my love advice.
But, you know, it's not a bad thing to invest yourself in someone if they're investing in you, too. And that, I think, is a difficult thing to discern. We don't notice an imbalance until it's too late. And
that
so,
is,
you
that,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely agree there. That's the problem a lot of times.
I think love is a mutual obsession. It kind of has to be. Because if somebody's self-absorbed, that's not going to last very long.
I think the thought of a Hollywood romantic love is love perfection is the obsession. And
wow,
the everyday.
That's just heartbreak.
And the everyday, okay, somebody's got to clean up the dog poop while I scrub the burnt cheese off the pan is the reality. And people want to obsess over what may never be and forget to live in the reality, which could be the true happiness, which is what we should be obsessing about.
I absolutely agree. And it's almost like I know so many people, and I was young, I'm sure I was one of those people. I know so many people who pass up a good thing because it's not that, you know, being swept off your feet kind of grandiose thing that you want. And the reality of love, it can be amazing, but it doesn't happen like the movies. The movies have an hour and a half to you know, do what they do. And love is work, you know? It's not just the attraction. It's not just, you know, how you guys, you know, get along. It's not just chemistry. It is how you guys, I'm going to say play the game, but it's not a game. It's how you guys navigate moods, how you guys navigate a situation, how you guys can pull each other out of your own ass, because not for nothing, everybody has moments very, very often where we cannot get our head out of a butt. So if somebody can laugh you out of that or pull your attention away from your own, you know, negative self-talk or whatever, that is amazing. And it's so overlooked because that's not what the focus is in all this mass media romance nonsense. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you that, you know, it's the little things. I'll tell you what.
Hi to Hatter.
Hi, Hatter. Oh, hey, hi, Hatter. He's in the studio, too. Jeez Louise, I am not on my game today. Hey, Hatter, how are you? At least you weren't there as long as Sweet, so I'm doing better.
Hey, everybody.
So I get the feeling you have good stories. So what are your thoughts on obsession?
Well, you mean personal?
Yes. Well, and personal, not personal, you know, in general, however.
Anybody that was stalked at one time in their life knows it's not fun.
Yeah.
By any means. I'll just relate a picture that was framed, thrown through my kitchen window.
Oh, nice.
Back in my car. Back in my car, smashed in. And a couple flat tires.
Are these people that hated you or loved you?
Well, that's my question.
They wanted to get his attention.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they want to pay me back. I mean, it's that classic crazy girlfriend eyes. I learned to recognize those. She's got crazy girl eyes, man.
OMG. That is, you know, I can't even imagine somebody come. I know I've known people that have slashed tires. I've known people that would take a baseball bat to their exes, whatever, when they saw them in front of their, you know, whoever's house. I've known these people.
Yeah, but, if you deserve it, if you deserve it, that's one thing. You know, if you cheated or something, I can pay back some other. But it was just, couldn't give them what they wanted.
Crazy. It's okay. I was dating a guy who had the nerve to take me to his, you know, a friend's Thanksgiving. And this friend happened to be best friends with his ex. So this woman lied about being pregnant, having an abortion, and whatever, because she could not stand that he took another girl to their Thanksgiving. And I was just like, nice. I don't need that in my life. It's okay, really.
Yeah, you're the innocent bystander at that point.
I'm like, you know, I can't with the crazy. I'm impassioned, you know. I'm a hot-blooded, you know, Hispanic woman. We get elevated. But I've never been one to take off my earrings and throw down. So that's a little much for me.
It is.
And it's scary as all get out.
Unless it's sanctioned by the Nevada State Commission, Fight Commission.
My ex once threw hot dogs.
Threw hot dogs?
Yeah, so I'm not much of a, I'm not a good fighter. I'm not a good fighter when it comes to people that I'm in a relationship, and it tends to make them more angry because I tend to swallow everything that I'm going to say and don't say anything, which pisses people off, right? And one day, she was a Aries/Taurus redhead, and she got really angry all the time. The opposite of me. And, yeah, hot dogs went flying one time.
The metaphor of your girlfriend throwing hot dogs at you just blows me away.
Well, one time she did throw her glasses too. I don't know. She was so type. And then afterwards she's like, I don't know how you stay so calm. And I'm like, one of us got to stay calm.
Yeah, I had that pregnant thing thrown at me once.
Guy, you've even had women throw their wieners at you, huh?
OMG. And on that note, Rat, I've got Pee Wee on the board. He put two poems for me to choose, but I think he has one of them in your show next week, Rat, so I'll take the other one. I don't tend to pre-read my stuff. Sweet. Would you be a doll and read this for me?
I will. I'm putting my poem in your board now too, so
let's
go with Pee Wee. Hopefully I can read all his big words. This is Souvenir.
Nope, Misery is on the board. Did I not put the right one on?
I have Souvenir, but okay, wait, hold on. I might be on the wrong board. I might have gone to the topic board instead of the chat board. You know how I am. Oh, yep, Misery.
Multitasking.
Yes. Misery by Pee Wee. On the basement floor, thoughts falling away and into oblivion, I then saw her, baked an overdose smile calling me home into the great unknown ether. Then I awoke and there she was, beauty, on the hospital bed, surely looking my best. Wanted to reach out and kiss her, you see, but I couldn't move, felt weighted down, rest. Coming to her again, this time I could move. Alas, you were gone. My mama was there, and some policemen, though, but I had no proof. Hours later, I was home, still smelling your hair. An angel, you had come to save me. Though, although you were married already, your husband was states away, gave me a reason to live and grow, gave me a reason for a reason, and that's because, daughter, you believed in me, gave to me a home when I had nowhere else to go, nobody else to believe in, you're both all I have. The years went by in the sun and rain and snow, but the last five became so terribly hard after your divorce. We spent a year or two of bliss together, living as friends and more, then Bastard showed up, the new boyfriend, and under his thumb in no time, addicted to meth, battered, abused, scared with nothing I could do, and a year turned into a year, and I feel I never mattered to you at all. Only time I see you is if you hand me cash to get your dope or to beat you up. Don't answer my phone calls or my texts. You're supposed to be my best friend. It's enough. You make me feel unborn. Save me to screw. I wish you would have let me die, so I never had to see this become of you. Not the beautiful girl once known or the best friend from before. Glad I'd be to say goodbye to this throwaway world. End poem.
Well, that took a turn. You know, that's kind of heartbreaking. You know, if you're going up with somebody and they're your best friend, opposite sex best friend, and they're married and they have a kid, and you know, you're long and you know, and the guy's never there, and so you cannot help but fall in love, and then they get divorced, and woohoo, here's my chance, but only for 2 seconds to tide you over till the next one that gets you addicted to whatever and ruins your life, and you have to sit there and watch like you're nothing. Like, everything, you give them everything, and you are not even enough to matter. You're just, you know, the go-to guy for all the useless things that the other person has turned you into. That's a heartbreaking thing to have to watch somebody go through, somebody that you care about, somebody that, I mean, and then you got to wonder, this guy's deadbeat, and here I am loving you with all that I have. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with me, you know? So this was a very, very vivid and very, very heartbreaking. So, Sweet, you read it. What are your thoughts?
I thought, you know, it's written with a powerful voice. And, you know, there's such a sadness weaved into such a tragedy. I think one of the saddest things is that he's saying, you know, he wants to say goodbye to himself for what's happened to her. To watch that beauty fade, for her not to believe in all the things he wanted her to believe in. And I think that it's just so terribly sad, because so many people, if they would just look into the eyes of someone else and see themselves as someone else sees them, they might be amazed at how wonderful they really are. And sometimes self-esteem rots us from the inside out, when we could just turn around and see something beautiful through the eyes of someone else. And I really like how he portrayed all of that.
Yeah, it was very powerful. Very powerful indeed. And Rasmus Tor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of took the same direction. You know, it's difficult to watch somebody make what you feel are the wrong decisions. You know, there's still their decisions to make. And when, you know, like CP said, you see something within them that you can't stand to watch them be hurt. And you can't walk away either because of how you feel. It's heart-wrenching in a lot of ways, because, you know, you're not just watching them get hurt. You feel slighted at the same time. And then when the time comes that, you know, you may actually have that chance, you know, it turns out that they never really felt that way about you anyway. You were wrong. And, you know, that's also a little disappointing, shall we say. You know, it's very emotional. The situation he describes, you know, and you know, to be in the middle of something like that, there's a lot of turmoil involved, a lot of heartbreak, And then there's the lines that you're talking about, you know, you want to, you know, not walk away, you know, to do the right thing, but at the same time, you can't intervene. You can't do anything because, you know, you have to respect the other person, because if you truly care about them, you know, you have to support them. So as much as you see that it's the wrong thing, that there's really nothing you could do but try and comfort them, you know, in their time of need. So, yeah, this is very emotional.
It is. I also take a tough love kind of tact, at you know, at least for a while, and until it threatens to ruin everything, and then you don't know them at all, and then you back off a little bit because I have a big mouth and I'm highly inappropriate. So Skye, what do you think?
I thought it was very engrossing piece, and I may not know anything about, you know, stalkers, but I definitely do know about the obsession, and, you know, how drugs can really affect somebody that we love, and how it turns them and turns our relationship with them, and, you know, leaves one on the other side kind of feeling helpless and saying what happened to the person that I cared so much for. So when you got down to that section, I really gravitated towards it, and I thought it was really well done.
Absolutely. And Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah, the tragedy is she knew what was going on too. Because she came back. She'd always come back, whether to try to get money or something, because she knew she just couldn't beat the addiction. I talked about the storyline. The poem's well constructed. Yeah, the storyline is just tragic. And then to hold on to something in the past, like you said, the tough love, not saying that was what you could do, because unless you're in that position, loving somebody so hard that you want to help them, but you can't. And he expressed that very well.
He did. And not only is there rejection to feel useless, but you can't, your hands are bound and you feel useless, and it's difficult, you know? I mean, if you can't save the one you love, what good are you, you know? So I absolutely understand that. Rack and Tor, I put you up on the board. I'll go, since you read, because I'd have you read everything because I'm half blind and having a time with my stupid computer. So I might as well just ask you, since I put that out there. You want to read Rack?
Who did you ask, Sky?
You. She doesn't do cold reads. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I know you just read, but I love you. You've got that voice. It's
okay.
All
I'm good. I love to read. Gives me a chance to go through all of this. I just read it, so okay. I'm good. This is hopelessly devoted. Her love was fierce and unapologetic, despite betrayal sparking her wrath. The passage of time paid her the courtesy of composing her final epitaph. Unable to remain contained within a chalk outline, her devotion burns steadfast. Her emotions will labor on even after she's breathed her last. I'm on computer, sorry. The beautiful agony behind her eyes is a reminder that her heart is beyond reach. Glimpsing her struggle robs me of the power of speech. Every tear, another nail in my coffin, sinking unrequited aspirations like stone. As darkness swaddles me in silence, fate decrees I will die alone. Because eternity becomes tragedy when love is misbegotten, and the heart becomes a prison, immortalizing the wrongs that can't be forgotten. And boom.
You know, Rack, here's the thing. There is a depth of wistfulness when you write things. You know, it's that gosh darn Hurt Locker again. It is all of those unrequited aspirations, like those little turns or phrases, are eloquent and profound. you know, as the darkness swaddles me in silence, faith decrees I will die alone. I mean, there's something to be said for loving somebody to the point where no one else will do. I mean, not in a compulsive kind of, you know, let me waste my life away kind of way, just a, I love them so much that if it is not this high standard of a minimum, then it's not real love to me. I'd rather just love this person, even if they can't love me back the way I want them to. And it's heartbreaking. Eternity becomes a tragedy when love is misbegotten, and the heart becomes a prison, immortalizing the wrongs that can't be forgotten. And here's the thing about that, too. They say time kind of shines up a turd, basically, where you want to remember the best of people. You tend to forget all the little assy bits. But it can go to the other extreme as well, because if those assy bits cause you pain, it's not something you're likely to forget as well, you know. But you open this so beautifully. Her love was fierce and unapologetic. And you know, kind of how love should be. It should be there and nothing to cower into or hide or be ashamed of. You know, there, it should be a little bold, a little brazen, and a little lovely, you know. But then, you know, your next line is all betrayal and whatnot, so maybe not. So, sweet, again, you read it, so what are your thoughts?
I think love is sand, especially here. As eternity becomes tragedy when love is misbegotten, heart becomes a prison, immortalizing wrongs that can't be forgotten. So love is sand, the polished rocks of hate redefined. For hate has to die somewhere beautiful.
You know, sweet, earlier we were talking, as I'm sure you heard when I didn't see you, about a change in perspective. And after I get the comments for Rack's poem, I remind me to go over what we were talking about earlier with that whole change in perspective, because I wanted to touch on that. But I couldn't do that when you weren't here, even though you weren't, I just didn't see you. So, Sky, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was a beautiful piece. I love the way that it was written. The, I don't know, it just had a vintage feel to it, the way that it was worded, the way that it was framed, and the rhyme pattern. It just, I don't know, it felt very, very vintage. The opening was phenomenal. You know, despite the her love was fierce and unapologetic. I know other people have touched on it, but I really love that opening. Despite the wrath, but despite betrayal sparkling her wrath, and you know, courtesies are a dangerous thing. Everybody wants to be courteous, but sometimes what's needed is truth, or you know, just not skirting around things that needn't be skirted around. I just really liked that part. And then when you got down to every tear on another nail in my coffin, sinking unrequited aspirations like a stone, I mean, your stomach just drops. It's as a reader. Of course, it's the Hurt Locker, so I know I love it, but I mean, you write it so, so well. It is so, I think, raw and just very relatable in ways to other people, and even if they've never felt it, you describe it in such a way where they can. Really, really well done.
And how are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's basically the same sentiment. What comes along with that is the words, "If you love me, you do this," or, you know, and it's the answer to that is space. You need to make space between the two, and you have to allow yourself to forget, because you can't if it's always in your face, always being reminded.
If you love me, that is the worst thing to hear. because they obviously believe that you don't. Because if you actually did, you know, and it doesn't matter what they say after that, it diminishes your feelings. It discounts your relationship, and it breaks your heart. And if you have been giving somebody all that you have to give, emotionally speaking, and they come at you with whatever nonsense is going to follow, if you love me, then it's like, well, why bother trying? Like you said, you know, if you love me, and I'm just like, oh, my heart, I can't. That's like the worst thing, you know? Well, I guess the worst thing, but that's not a good one. So about a change in perspective. Okay. We were talking, Sweet Pea, and you were telling me about different ways to look at time and things. And I was talking about earlier how, you know, soulmates, you know, that kind of attraction or love and obsession, you know, it's all about how you look at it because it looks the same, feels the same, you know. So tell us the little thing we were talking about the other day about the birthdays.
God. Oh, you mean my nieces and my nephews? Which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about the 18th birthday.
Oh, thank you. Okay, yes. Well, I mean, we talk about so many things. So we talk about love and what real love is, and a lot of people will approach you with different perspectives about when you have children, oh, watch them, they grow up so fast, your time's going to go by. And to change perspective, when you are with people with small children, one of the great perspective ways to change perspective is to remind them they only have 18 summers. That's all you have with your children is 18 summers. And that changes a lot of people's perspectives. Because in a life, you may have 60 or 70, or even, if you're lucky, 80 summers. But with your children, you only have 18, and that's if you're lucky. Because most of them, by the time they're 12 and 13, you're not spending your summers with them. So that changes perspective. And when we talk about love, we can change perspective on how you look at. But that's one of the things that helped change my perspective about children and how things move so quickly was 18 summers.
So it makes it concrete because I can tell somebody, you know, time flies and, you know, that means nothing. It feels like nothing. It's just kind of, yeah, it is what it is, whatever I know. But when you stop and you put it in concrete terms and things that they can wrap their mind around, it breaks your heart because especially when they're little, it feels like it's, you know, every moment, as quick as it goes, almost lasts forever because you're so immersed in it. And then as they get older, there's more stuff to do and you don't have a lot of time because they're in this club and that thing and whatever. And when you break it down so you've got this finite amount of time with them, it's a big deal. It doesn't change anything as far as the reality of your daily life. You know, it doesn't do anything but change how much it weighs. And, you know, it's all about how you look at it. So I like that story because, you know, it's all about how you look at it. And so I put myself up on the board. And, no, I did not write for my own show because I'm horrible, horrible, horrible. But I do have this little ditty. This is Time, Retrospect, and Hindsight, or Buried Alive-ish. And it goes like that. Buried by the weight of time suffered in silent battles, babbling in incessant twists of logic. Seconds bridge memories that can't seem to remember there is bliss in ignorance. Visions of forkless roads on an endless path only notice the peace it walked through as the dust clears the end of time. 20 years in as many seconds, anchored in non-ambulatory war wounds, realizing in calculated percentages the distance was never in miles. It was in the gaps in reasoning that failed to notice the beauty until the world turned gray. And I lie. buried by the weight of time suffered in silent battles, babbling in incessant twists of logic. And poem.
You know. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just, you know, that comment, that line about the distance was never in miles. The incongruity of perspectives. That's really a striking thought. When you know, two people, I mean, it's not unusual for two people to look at the same thing and see something different. But you know, to describe it like that is really kind of striking. And you've got a way of honing in on things like that and really painting a vivid picture of what emotion you're going through while you're bleeding. If you haven't bled out already, with all the bleeding you do on the page, my friend. Beautifully done, Mrs. Well.
Thank you.
Sweet, can you give a comment for Pretty Bird?
I certainly can. A second bridge memory that cannot seem to remember, there is bliss and ignorance. And I lie. How do you lie to, of course, Amadeus wants to talk to you too. I love the idea of a second bridge memories, because our memories bridge further and further back into time. And sometimes we don't always remember what we don't remember until we have to remember it, until it's thrown right up into our face. But we lie to ourselves about them and over. I think this was just stunning and beautiful and profound. You have a way of words, and we fail to notice the beauty until the world turns gray. But even then, sometimes we lie. Maybe it wasn't as beautiful, but we're going to make it prettier than we thought it was. Once again, for the bird, you make the twisted words of logic untwist, I guess. Beautifully done. Thank you.
And Sky?
Let me start off. I really love the title with the buried alive-ish. I really like that. And the meaning behind it, especially when you read the poem. The weight of words and their meaning, and think about this, you can put into, it's not, you can put it into many different interpersonal relationships, not just one type. When you speak of, and even in one's endeavors as well, like you could really root it in any of those subjects, but the silent battles babbling, I really love that. Those were, well, to me, that the way I take it, those words that that never are said but are always below the surface. And then this incessant twist of logic, how we can convince ourselves of things, or we could let other people convince us of things. And the way that you write it without really pinpointing it, I think when the reader takes it, they can really kind of take it into themselves and put their own history into it, and their own subtext, because the way that you wrote it and has different meaning, I guess. Well, the same meaning, but maybe different relationships. And then, again, I have to second Sweet Pea's second bridge, but more so because of the last line where there's bliss and ignorance. And sometimes we compartmentalize so well that we're able to ignore certain things just to be able to function or kind of get through situations, or even relationships with people. And I like the idea, and I know I'm taking it step by step, but I really like the idea of the forkless road, because sometimes things can be so washed over with time, we forget all those choices or those hard choices we had to make. And we just think about, okay, well, this was, we kind of hold on to those more precious memories, and those other ones we'll try to soften over just so that we can palate it. And I think this was great. I really loved it. Really well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, for someone who didn't write for her own show, she sure was able to pull that out of her hat. And speaking of hats, Hatter. comments were pretty good.
Yeah. You write so it's profound. I mean, it's your metaphors are like 20 years in as many seconds. The distance was never in miles, was the gaps in reasoning. Blows me away sometimes. Very jealous. You are. Are you a counselor or something, or an arbitrator? Something?
No, I'm not a counselor.
Or did you have kids? Yeah,
I have many kids. I have a degree in psychology, but I'm not a counselor. And I don't equate any of that with me puking on a page, but I'm sure it pops through there. You know, I picked this poem because, and I touched upon it earlier, like when we at the opening of the show, my obsession is all in my own head. Like I don't need people to see my crazy. I'm crazy enough on my own, you know. And it's all this. This is what it looks like. The open thinking, the talking yourself into and out of things. So you want to remember the good things, but then the other half of you is like, listen, there's all of these little things that sliced you open and you love them anyway, you know. All of these little things. And then, you know, when the room gets quiet and you're right there next to somebody and you're kind of content with the warmth of the body, but you're not, you know. And it's just, it's a rough thing to go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And you can't really function in your day-to-day life when you're in that mode. You can't, you know, climb out of your own depression and your own the weight of whatever it is that you can't stop thinking about, because every time you look at it, you want to see something different. You want to come to a different conclusion. You want there to be something to change to fix things, even if it's not true. And so you look and you look and you look, and it doesn't leave a whole lot of time for reality in the rest of your life. It you know, hence the buried alive dish, because it kind of kills you slowly. Not that you need it all background, but I figured I might as well. And it is after 11 o'clock, so let's do upcoming shows, because I will forget because I get to talking. So what is coming up this week? I don't think that there's a show on Friday. Let me see. I don't see one. So then it's Saturday, Hunter.
Saturday, The Monster Inside You.
Oh, my goodness. I just heard that song today. There's a song. By Addict. Oh, that is so perfect. I'm just going to have to listen to that and pen something. See, I could write something for your show. Apparently, I can't write something for mine. But that's fine. And Monday is Antibac Day in Australia. I have no clue what that is, but we will find out. Do you know what that is, Hannah?
No. I haven't.
It's an acronym. What are the letters?
A-N-Z-A-T.
Oh, it's an
Australian, New Zealand military, I think, something like that. A-N.
So is that kind of like their Memorial Day?
Yeah. Deb's going to take a side chair,
exactly,
she said, and AP's going to run it.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think
that's
exactly
on
what
Monday.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday, I believe, is your show. Yes, sir?
Unless they got bumped around again, but yeah, I think souvenirs from your guilt trip.
Yes. On the 25th, on Tuesday at 11. So there is that. So they are all on the top of 4. So take a look at those.
And I'm gonna bump it up to 10 from 11 to make it more accessible.
There you go. And Cy, do you have anything coming up?
Not yet. It's April. So on a Poetic Slice, I'm on a Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're doing The Hobbit again, so we are, and could write to any of the themes, scenes oh my gosh, I can't say this. The theme scenes, characters, or quotes, you can go anywhere you want, even if off topic from the topic itself. And there you go. Bring me a dragon or a poem related to Tolkien, I'll be happy. Or Hobbit's Purpose.
Awesomeness. I had you up on the board, Sky, but Hatter's got to go, so I put him up, and then you'll go after him, okay?
Okay.
Whenever you are, Hatter.
Oh, okay. I didn't. Oh, there it is. Okay. Okay. Called Death by Friend. He was killed by too much. Not of food, but of love. Too much. She was there when he laughed. She was there when he cried. She was there the day before. She was there the day when he died. Remembered is how quickly it can come to an end. It will be upon a stone, death by friend. Suffocate. I edited two stanzas out of it because they didn't make sense. That's why it's so short. Sorry.
Oh, you're fine. I love a good brevity. And, and we were talking about that earlier in the show with that whole, that suffocation, that, you know, to be responsible for someone's everything, where they're there and all the time, and they want to is your food too hot? Let me blow it on for you. Let me blow on it for you, where you can barely wipe your own butt because they're all up in your business all the time for everything. You know, well, what are you thinking now? And it's too much. It's that kind of neediness, and it could be innocent on their part, where they really just want to serve. Because there are people that find joy and fulfillment in the service of others, to do for those that they love. But, you know, in a mismatched pair, it's a little much. You need a hobby. You need, you know, some time on your own. You know, we need to schedule some affection and the rest. I don't want to see your face because it's too much. You know, I absolutely can get that. But when I first read he was killed by too much, not of food, but of love, too much. And the non-fully suffocating part of what that felt like to me is when somebody loves you so much more than you love them. It could be normal. Like, it can be just your you know, like, they're not crazy obsessed. They just, you know that they love you more than you love them. And it kind of breaks your heart because it's not that you don't love them back. It's just you don't love them enough. And it can break your own heart just because you can't be what you want to be for them. And that's where that took me before I read the rest of the poem. So, well done. I like a brevity that makes you think, because it's almost like magic, where you have so few words, yet it's got all of these different avenues of thought. So that's fabulous. Do not ever poo-poo a brevity, Mr. Man. I am just saying. So, Sweetie, what are your thoughts on Death by a Friend?
Real fickle human being. We want this romance and total devotion and obsession, and yet death by a friend, we want it because they suffocate us and we die. Is it too much? Is it too little? What is the special sauce we need? It's so damn hard to figure it out. But I so love this, my Hatter, my Hatter.
Thank you, Sweet.
You know, and it's funny, too, yes, that you're in one relationship, and they wanted all of this stuff. So you do all of this stuff for the next relationship, and they want none of that stuff. I mean, it is a hard road to navigate through relationships. It really, really is. And so, Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the whole bag of stuff thing. It's just like, there was a formula, damn it. I like Pretty Bird said, you know, brevity is a great, of course, they let you go. So, you know, and you're guiding them down a certain path, and you're using your voice, but, you know, you're not giving anyone an answer. You're posing a thought and letting them, you know, do with it what they will. And I think this is beautiful in that regard. You know, the whole thought of, love me, just, you know, not to death. That there is that line that you know, everyone's kind of trying to find and look for. It's like, when is it too much, you know? I've seen, you know, a lot of relationships where the person gets exasperated, like, you know, why are you crawling up my ass? You know, it turns into that sometimes when the person is like, you know, I thought that's what you wanted. Well, that was your mistake, and then it turns into a fight. You know, it's just one of those things where, you know, if there's that lack of communication, it really turns into a hairball, and it's not pretty. You've got all that. So, yeah.
Thanks, Jack.
You've got all that in you know, that little bit of words in a beautiful way. Well done.
Well, I had a bit of narrative before that. I've been talking, so.
And Sky, your thoughts?
Oh, I thought it was a great brevity. And, you know, sometimes, too, I have to say in the kind of conversation that's going around is, sometimes both people fall into this trap where you forget, you know, quantity, you know, quality is over quantity, where people, you know, they may spend too much time and it's not really quality time. It's just time together. And yeah, I agree. Sometimes we just need our own hobbies. But this is great because it does kind of put in perspective of how much it makes someone think. And I think everybody's different. Everybody's lines are different. Everybody's, and kind of along with what Pretty Bird said, you know, it's hard to find that balance with different people that you're with. And I like how this poem doesn't, it makes somebody think about, okay, where am I? Where is that? What is too much? And kind of put it in that perspective. Really well done. It has a little bit of dark humor in it too, I might say, in my opinion, but well done.
Thank you, Sky.
Do you remember that movie with Cher and the pizza boy? He says, "I love you," and she just looks at him exasperated. Snap out of it!
Moonstruck.
I don't know, but do you remember the movie Boxing Helena?
That is, you know, it's a cringy movie with the most disappointing ending of all time. Like, I was down until the end of that movie. I was very much no, and then what's next, and no, and then what's next, and no, and then, oh man, you know.
What movie are you talking about?
Helena. Okay, you know what? Oh. Here is spoiler alerts. I'm just letting y'all know. Okay, so beautiful next door neighbor goes to the party. This guy's a doctor, whatever he is. I don't remember. It's been a million years. And she goes to this party, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. She's not interested. He is. Next thing you know, party's over, and he cuts off her legs and her arms and her this and that because she keeps on trying to get away. And now he is her everything. She needs him to be her everything because she can't do anything on her own because she's stumpy. She's just stumpy. But at the end of it, it turns out that was like a dream, and it starts kind of back over at the beginning. I was just like, well, that's just not okay. But it was like super cringy, super, super, super cringy.
Yeah, Stumpy. Oh my God.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
Just saying.
And that song, by the way, by My Chemical Romance, the Helena. That's all I think about. It really is. It's all I think about. It's that movie. It's. I'm broken. It's fine. So.
You
guys should watch it, though. It's super creepy.
Yeah, you really do have to watch it if you never know what happened. It really, it is creepy.
So, Cry, it's your turn.
Thank you.
Guys, I got to go. Thank you. Would that be
good? Thank you for coming and hanging out and giving us your insight. You have a good night.
You too. Thank you very much.
Good night, Hatter. I'm going to go to bed after this, too. I've got school in the morning. But this, I picked this one out because I guess this can be considered obsession when you can't get over something and where you keep putting yourself into a situation that you know is unhealthy, but you just can't quite help it. It's from 2014, so it's pretty old, but it goes, castled a mahogany box heart. I wish that I could be clever. I wish that I never let you break through the haze when you cross my borders and render everything in disorder, then disintegrate. Words like a braided broth against my lips, pouring down my throat with each phantom kiss, pebbled sentences that skip along reflective sills as I fill in the blanks, twirl in a garden of broken hearts and medieval windmills. But your insecurities have casted cobblestone blockades, and I know not the words, the right things to say, fingers splintering against my castled, mahogany-boxed heart as I try to unhinge, place myself back into the dark. As you break in and break down months of what I had to fix, with only a sound, the smile of your lips, as I try to hold a grip, pieces of me I had to salvage, but it's no use, my fingers bending loose, and I can't help but weep as you evaporate into yourself, leaving me dry along the ridge of you, as if we were held captive in moat's bank, unable to leave nor tread the bottomless bed of disheveled earth, and I wish I could hide away on that island forge, crumple like paper, but you've learned how to swim, hung in my lungs like vapor. I breathe you in, all those skipping words, swallow my pride, beg despite the disappointment and hurt, all the while gasping, trying to inhale, to sail onward with my life, to try to learn a new poetic device. But you bring me down a tumbling tide like a landslide. And will I ever recover from February's fall, when the last leaf browned in your eyes and sorry said it all? I wander now stranded with one headlight, searching for myself with a spotlight. And perhaps I should accept what has gone and wept. Was it really ever there? A question I ask myself when I dip into the well of despair. Tell me, will I ever be able to repay this debt, the one I put on loan the day we met? When I invested my future in your script, a handwritten page clumsily gripped, will I ever get back those promises wrapped, tucked in the palms of your hands that sifted through like sand? You tried to return them once, but I wasn't ready to accept, and now they're lost, wandering somewhere out there. While I am here, filled with regret, having a war with myself, trying to find those promises you packed in jars, placed on a shelf, so that I can break them, so that I can move on, perhaps regain a semblance of self. For if I could, I'd unhinge this mahogany heart. I'd reverse it to a time before it beat the rhythm of yours. I would unscrew each bolt until its cavity was left bare. I would craft a wooden box, carve the word gutted into each side, place it in my chest so that when you asked, I'd have nothing there to give, so that I wouldn't have to relearn how to live or hear the breaking tragedy left ticking on rhythmic and off-key as I stand waiting to unhinge, waiting to change, watching you crash, then evaporate. Vapor in my chest, a lasting wet, tears of all those moments dismantled. And yet, I let you break through the haze, cross my borders, render everything in disorder until you disintegrate. Swallow words like a braided froth against my lips, pouring down my throat with each phantom kiss, pebbled sentences that skip along reflective sills as I fill in the blanks and still twirl in a garden of broken hearts and windmills, fingers splintering against my castled mahogany box heart, tucked in the palms of your hands as if they were an endless sieve of sand. End poem. And I'll read that better for you one day. I was really tired.
So you break me beautifully, I'm just saying. And I had highlighted a section up here that you've repeated down here at the bottom, so I was all excited. Pebbled sentences that skip along reflective sills as I fill in the blank. And isn't that torture? to go through all those things that were glossed over or not really said, that were alluded to but never really written in concrete, and you put it there yourself. You believe what you want to believe. You hear what you want to hear, and you go over the words that hang in the air waiting to land, you know? And I swear in memory you can hear them hit, that it had to be real because it felt real. It was there. It had to have been a thing. And it wasn't. And this part here really made me catch my breath, and I had to bite it back because it moved me. And where is it? Where is it? Where is it? It's up here. It's up. Well, this is kind of long. It'll take me a second. Here it goes. Okay. So you had a part up here that you had mentioned the promises first before the jars. Somewhere. Okay, I have no clue where it is. I can't find it. But you had mentioned the promises, and then you came down here that I lost again about the jars, which I absolutely love here. Oh, will I ever get back those promises wrapped, touching the palms of your hands, like that sister's cue to be like singing? So will I ever get back those promises? And then down here, when you go, you know, trying to find those promises, you pack in jars and place in shelves so that I can break them. Isn't that the manipulative bullshit? I cannot, because they don't want to be the bad guy. You know what I mean? And they won't break the promise, but they will push you to tip the scale just a little bit to be like, see, you did it. I didn't. Goodbye. And that whole thing, that so that I can break them. You know, there has been one instance in my life that I am holding out for that to happen, because I will not be the bad guy somebody makes me to be. And it sickens me. I am sickening myself. So that spoke to me on a visceral, visceral level. This is stunning. And you said you're going to read it for me better because it's all spoken words. So, you know, I'm going to hold you to that at some point. You did not do a bad job. You did a great job. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece. And I was all serious. But since you offered, I'm going to hold you to it.
Okay.
So rack and court. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, what can you really say? This is beautifully emotional. It tugs at you. From the very beginning, you know, you indicate a little bit towards the reluctance. It's like, you know, I wanted to resist, but you kind of got drawn into it. And then the perspective changed a little bit, and the relationship developed, and you know, fleshed out the way that they did, and you know, people got hurt, boxes got I really just, wow. I think a progression in the way that you tell a story like that, you know, you walk us through almost from beginning to end, and you don't leave too much to the imagination in the middle as far as, you know, the color, and you kind of land on just it shifts direction and really stings, and I think you do it beautifully. It's one of the things I like about the way that you write. Just lovely.
Thank you, Rex.
And Sweetness, your thoughts?
I think you write me a poem, it's like to cry myself to sleep. To feel less guilty for all the pain I spewed out on the street. A powerful poem, Sky, Sky, Sky.
Thank you, Sue.
It is glorious, glorious, glorious. I want to end with you, Sweet. So I've just put a poem on the wall, but she is not here. Would you read that for us? I will put it up. I put you up, but I was kind of hoping that she would call in, but she has not, and it's getting close to the end. So I will put her up. Will you read her for me?
Yes, I will.
You're awesome. Are you hanging out, Sky, or are you leaving?
No, I have to. I have to wake up early, and I have my goddaughter coming in the morning, and my voice is gone. So I hope you have a wonderful show. Thank you. Sweet pea, I'll book you. I'll bookmark you. And I hope you guys have a good night.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us and bringing the beautiful pea.
Good night, Sky.
Good night.
You're my obsession. So whenever you're ready, distraction from an obsession is hazardous to the health. By Deborah Lee. Gripping is the grip of neurosis, color snapshots parade in my brain. Now my enthusiasm for you is bordering on mania, consuming me in the day and breaking my focus at night. Like the bee intruding the bonnet, the horsefly buzzing in the bedroom, standing by the kitchen countertop, Dyson Jared. Then, as my brain drifts traveling to you, the knife slices my fingertips. Then sliding cheddar cheese over the grater cuts my skin, leaving bloody red goo puddled. The bloody goo dried up, but this obsession may kill me. And oh.
You know, gotta love the vivid crewer, you know, when, you know, you're so lost in thought, so obsessed that you're chopping off fingers and grating off skin, you know, it may be a problem. You might want to seek help for that, you know, but I this is exactly what I was leaning towards, you know, drifting into the grip of neurosis, you know, color snapshots parade in my brain of all the things that have nothing to do with reality, nothing to do with what you're doing, nothing to do with anything. They just take your brain on a ride and you don't even know how you got to where you're going. And I think that she painted that really, 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 really well, you know. You slice the fingertip, you've got the great. I mean, I can't help it. I love the bloody mess. I do. So, Sweet Pea, what are your thoughts?
I'm glad she's not operating heavy machinery. We might have lost her. I think it's funny. It's cute, and it's kind of glorified grossness, and I always like that.
Right? That is funny. And Rack and Tor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm remembering right, because now my head's starting to get a little fuzzy. I must be bleeding out. What the hell? I'm sorry. I'm lost.
It happens. Hey, listen. Okay, I missed the whole first part of my show, so you're fine. And you are on the board, Sweet. I have had you read everything. I absolutely appreciate it because I am all discombobulated and my vision is crap tonight. So I absolutely appreciate you doing all the work. You're awesome.
Not a problem. I like to read. And your subject is fun. So... here we go, Obsessions by Sweet Pea. Crows perched atop the wrought iron pinnacles of a gothic fence line, hypervigilant of gargoyles crouching in the hidden alcoves of the garden, where gnomes and rabbits play hide-and-seek among the flowers. White linen tablecloths are dressed in cut glass vases, filled with the scents of magnolias, the soft pink color of champagne, mesmerized the butterflies fluttering in the afternoon sun. His eyes mirrored the blue fleck sleeves and the pinstripes of his suit, glittering in the grave waves of the storm brewing under each wink, growing tiresome of the man-child clinging to his bride. The bodice of her gown outlined the purity of lust within her chest. Satin ribbons and pearl buttons designed for Titan in mermaid-style glace. He craved a smile, a touch, a kiss upon her virgin face.
amber beams of the lunar moon begin to change the atmosphere. And he smiled as the band played an eerie tune for witches to hear. The bride began to dance. Her feet dangled above the grass. Her mother chanted the ancient wedding song as the coven sang along. Winds of black and suns of blue deep the charms and shades of two. A loveless man shall die in ruin if he crosses my child by cheating. No glass is raised to praise the groom as his father sucked out life from open wounds, cursed his seed and betrayed his name, claimed his bride, wiping blood from his mouth and chin. He proclaimed his love again. A new groom will touch her flesh. Her obsession lies within, unaware of the spells of hate now cast. Her groom will return for a last to strip the storm from his eyes, and though both father and son shall die. Her lust for cash far outweighs the obsession of an ass and home.
Oh, that's funny. At the obsessions of an ass. I did not see that ending coming. That is awesome. Oh, my goodness. My sweet. You've got the lusty virgin. You've got the floating in the air, the chanting witches. And you've got blood sucking and kill them all. You gotta love it, you know. You gotta love it. The evil men must die. They are useless. We are good. Love you, Rack. You're not included in evil men. And I'll just get myself another one. It's fine. A new groom will touch her flesh. Her obsession lays in within. Unaware of the spells of hate now cast, her groom will return for a laugh to strip the storm from his eyes, and then both father and son shall die. You know, should I feel bad about this poor guy who's getting married and instead ends up just dead? Because I don't. You know, maybe I'm just sinister. It's fine. I love this. I love your descriptions of everything. I love that I can see the tables. I can see them floating in the air. I can see the cut of her dress because, you know, with your Titan and the mermaids, it's just, you know, I'm picturing sweetheart neckline, boobies all, you know, looking like a butt, and then the whole mermaid cut thing with it. Absolutely. I think this is fabulous. You weave a wonderful, wonderful tale. And I love it when it's all murder and mayhem. I do. So Rack and Tour, what about this coven's wedding? Tell me, what are your thoughts?
I love the opening. She paints such a gothic picture with the gargoyles and everything. I mean, classic imagery. Don't get to hear that too often, at least not the stuff that I tend to come across. So that put a bit of a dark smile on my face. And, you know, again, just the direction that she takes things in, you kind of know where she's leading you. So she sets the table, as they say. And she served up a full meal, to be sure. I so enjoy your pen, sweetie.
Oh, thank you, babe.
I am still stuck in with sucking the blood out of wounds. I'm just like, ooh, now it's a party. You got your witches, you got your chanting, you got your floating in midair, but you need a little bloodletting. You're good. So you've got all the bases covered. I absolutely love that. You know, I had so much fun tonight, guys. I didn't know where it was going to go because obsession is, you know, people have different thoughts of what that entails, especially with today's modern vernacular of I'm so obsessed, which I was not looking for, which nobody gave me because you all are fabulous. And because, you know, I don't care about fads. It's just not my bag. And so, yeah, the whole it is nice, by the way, to have a wedding scenario that is not all happily ever after and Prince Charming and, you know, Meek Little Women and whatnot. Oh, no, 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 no. She is the strong one. She is taking charge. What's yours is mine. What's mine is mine. And I don't need you anymore. And the day's not even over yet.
Right.
Get off my lawn. Oh, my goodness. We were just talking about today Rack being all grumpy and me being the crotchety old lady because he's all, you know, get off my arm. I can't get off my lawn. And I just want to answer my damn door. We're fine.
You kids get off my lawn.
Oh, my goodness. I had such a good time. So it is 22, and I think for the first time ever, I might actually cut out early. I mean, I can talk for another 20 minutes about a session because, you know, we all suffer with our own little mental things. Mine happens to be overthinking to the point that it's detrimental to my own personal well-being and like my own like emotional well-being. I know this. It doesn't make it any better than knowing that you can see you're crazy does not make you less crazy, you know? So it's interesting. And I know that I had posed this as obsession from or to or with another, but I think there's a lot of obsession that we do, you know, internally in our own minds to our own selves that nobody knows about. Shh, we do not talk about these things. I do because I give no shit. So yeah, like I have an addictive personality. Like I come from a long line of alcoholics. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I can't take aspirin. I can't do any of the fun stuff. So my only thing to latch on are things I could do and everything that I think about. So I tend to learn to do things with my hands that give me time to think so that I don't have to take time away from things I need to think about later while I'm doing those things. And it's funny that I know that I do that and it doesn't stop me from doing things like spinning stinking yarn. What the hell is wrong with me? But, you know, it's just one of those things. So we all tend to kind of hyper-focus on this little thing or that little thing or this little thing or that little thing. So I think a lot of us, so I refuse to believe I'm the only one. I think that a lot of us process in minutia. You know, I know very few people that are truly laid back to the point where it'll be what it is. Why worry about it? I think that when we get information, especially if it's painful, we have to process it as a whole, process it tiny bit by tiny bit by tiny bit, then in these little groups and those little groups and these little groups, then forwards and then backwards and then sideways and upside down. And then we look at the big picture again and then we're like, oh, okay, we're good. And that takes up a lot of time. And so I don't know how to classify that obsession because to me it's just daily life, you know, but I think it qualifies because it literally takes a lot of time. Purple Chaos is on the board saying, I'm hoping to be declared crazy on Thursday. I'm like, girl, I have been crazy. I know I'm crazy. I accept all of my what do you want to call them? Craziness, all of my little quirks. I know who I am. It is okay. Nobody has to like me. I like myself. We're good. And so what are your guys' thoughts as the last little caveat of obsession or whatever on that kind of internal thought process? Is that just how people process or can that also be obsessive?
Obsession is what we are. I think we're obsessed to stay alive. We're obsessed at trying to be happy. We're so obsessed about everything we forget to believe in what's in front of us.
This is true. But then if you put too much stock on what you can see, then you lose all the nuance and all the other possibilities and creativity. You know, you can't win. Life just kind of just slaps you this way, then it slaps you back that way. There's no winning. And just because I am an ass, I am okay with all kinds of obsession. What we're really talking about is the compulsion, the having to act on it, the having to actually be crazy in public, the actually having to stab the tires or suffocate the love or go out and do the acts, which is the compulsion. But, you know, I had to stick it out there because I'm an ass. But, you know, it is what it is. It starts in your brain and it goes on until it becomes alive. Also, that's how serial killers are born, just to put that out there. Most people that kill other people because what?
I can see that.
Yeah. So most people that kill other people don't all of a sudden, unless it's a crime of passion, they don't all of a sudden just decide to, you know, eviscerate somebody. They think about these little things. They think about those little things. Then it's not enough. It's not thrilling enough. And then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until their brain can no longer contain it. And then they have to act. And then that kind of is the release. And if it was Sunday, I would equate it to other things. But that's the release. And then they make room in their brain to relax a little bit. And then it builds up and builds up and builds up. Then it has to explode again. And that is like that with a lot of mental illness, but especially with serial killers, because it is such a there's such a powerful pathological mental component to that. So, you know, well, maybe I should call this love and serial killers, because that would have been an excellent topic. You know, I'm just saying. It's a little too late. I need to make that like a contest. Love and serial killers. That will be interesting. But okay, it is 1:45, and I am absolutely cutting out early. Miracle of all miracles. So you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with me the whole day. Thank you, sweet, for not hanging up on me when I didn't notice you were there. I love you so much. You have no idea. And Rack and Sky, thank you Thank you for filling in the blanks when Brock Talk decided I wasn't good enough to play host tonight. So I think I'm hoping you guys had as much fun as I did. I really just love the conversation and all the sideways rants, and I really do talk too much. So I'm going to shut up now. You guys are amazing. I love you. And for those still listening who are not on A Team of Voices, go to allpoetry.com and find us there. And good night, my loves. You are fabulous.
Bye.
But I don't even know what I'm plugged into, to tell you the truth. I don't even know where my studio is. Holy crap, it's been a day. All right, okay, I found it. Okay, I can end the show. I swear I'm not scatterbrained on a regular basis. Love you guys. good night. Good night.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.